Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson, coming to you on a Tuesday night. And my friends, we just came out of the Ken Ham, Bill Nye debate, which rocked the nation. Call it Ham on Nye. I'll have that with mustard, please. That's what happened tonight. It was Ham on Nye tonight. The great debate, the great creation debate at the Creation Museum on Tuesday, February 4th. And man, there might have been a million people watching this thing online. I have no idea. It was pretty big. It was introduced. It was publicized by NPR, MSNBC, the Denver Channel, I see. Lots of other sources were getting behind this thing. It was an exciting debate, and we're going to talk about it on this edition of the program. I have Dave Buhner on phone with me. He's at his house, and I'm at mine. On a Tuesday evening, as we wrap up the Bill Nye Ken Ham debate, Dave, good to have you here, and let's talk about this a little bit. Ham on Nye, is that fair?
Well, maybe it was Nye on Ham because they're trying to defend whether or not creation is a viable scientific theory or viable to be taught in science in this quote modern scientific age. Mm-hmm. So, really, from the very beginning, I think Ken Ham had to defend creationism rather than Bill Nye attack or defend evolution. And so it was a one-sided debate right off the bat.
Yeah. And Dave, from the beginning, you know, it's the evolutionists shaming the Christians. The Christians are the minority. The Christians are the underdog. And we know that. They're way, way, way overpowered, at least in the academy. You take a look at the percentage of universities that teach from an old Earth evolutionary perspective. And it's like 10,000 to 4 or 6,000 to 4 when it comes to universities that teach a biology major. It's a 99.9% of public schools, public universities are taking it from an evolutionary perspective. So they're shaming Christians on this. In fact, there was a couple of news stories that I picked up before the debate where they're encouraging Bill Nye to back out of it. It's not even worth giving the time to these creationists. Here it is. Bill Nye wastes his time debating creationists. That's Chicago Sun-Times over the weekend. He says, bad idea for both scientists and Christians. Ham's young earth creationism represents the distinct tendency of American Christian fundamentalists to reject science and use their religion to defend economic ideas, environmental degradation, anti-science extremism. But these views aren't actually inherent in Christianity. They've been imposed on the biblical text by politically motivated and theologically inept readers. With the exception of 5,870 years of Christian interpretation of these passages. You know, I can't find a church father that doesn't believe in young earth, Dave.
No, in fact, most of the early scientists all believed in young earth. It doesn't matter if you're talking about Copernicus or Bacon or Kepler or Descartes or Pascal or Newton or Boyle or Faraday or Mendel or Calvin or Planck or Einstein. Einstein, sort of. But, you know, most of these guys believed in God, and the vast majority have believed in a young earth. So if you were to look at science just historically, just the history of science, reading the authors, you would have a very theocentric Christian view of origins.
Yeah, and I think Ken Ham made that point in the debate. You know, for all the guys that did anything worthwhile in science up till about 1850, 1860, 1870, were creationists. And then eventually, you know, you get guys who know how to design cell phones and computers, but that doesn't necessarily take somebody who's got to, you know, get into creation and develop physical sciences and chemical sciences at that point. At that point, you've got the major science fields developed so that technological science can advance, but it took creationists in order to bring all that about. Well, the reason this debate was important, I think, Dave, was because, number one, lots of people listening. Number two, Ken Ham is fairly well known. He's been on our radio program probably 10 times over the last 10 years. And Bill Nye, very well known, too. So these are not obscure professors from obscure universities where nobody knows their names. These guys have been out there and they've been talking to the rank and file for the last 15, 20, 25 years about their perspectives. And Bill Nye, of course, being the evolutionary perspective and Ken Ham being the creationist perspective. So The mere fact that you have a Christian, a solid biblical Christian who actually believes the Bible, isn't going to kowtow, isn't going to compromise on it, but just holds the Bible up and doesn't compromise to his epistemological authority. And then you get Bill Nye going up against Ken Ham with probably a million people across the nation at least knowing about the debate. This is probably the biggest single debate that's ever happened on the issue of creation worldwide. Wouldn't you agree?
I think it might be. It's certainly not the most important, but these are educators. They're both really not scientists that are in labs. They're both in the business of educating the population. Bill Nye using PBS and the various organizations he's with, and Ken Ham with Answers in Genesis. So you have these two educators who are coming, who are bringing large audiences with them, getting a lot of press, and we're in the internet age. So this might be the most watched creation evolution debate in the history of creation evolution debates.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about the purpose of the debate, because here's the point at which we may say Ken Ham did well or Ken Ham did not do as well. You got to examine the purpose of the debate, and the purpose of a debate is to challenge the fool in his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. That's the Proverbs. And it is to preach the gospel, and I would say it is to encourage the faithful, those Christians who already accept the word of God as their authority, and it equips them a bit to understand how to answer the fool in his folly. So you have those reasons. I would say that Ken Ham did well preaching the gospel and getting the gospel out in front of a lot of people.
I think he did a very fine job at affirming the gospel. He mentioned Jesus many times. He talked about the necessity of the death and resurrection of Christ. And anytime you can tell a million people the gospel, I got to give you a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, Ken Ham.
You go, boy. You go, boy. Yeah. And that's what happened. Now, you know, in terms of challenging the fool and his folly, there are points at which I was yelling at the screen and my wife was standing there next to me saying, "You're not in the debate. You're not in the debate. You know, sit down, sit down." I think there are points at which perhaps he could have challenged the fool a bit more in his folly.
Yes. And you don't want a Monday morning quarterback, a guy who's really standing up to do the good work here. But he missed some opportunities. And my impression of the debate was the topic ended up being so broad with so many accusations and so many defend this, that you couldn't zoom in on any one particular scientific area. So you got none of them really addressed to satisfaction. But there was real opportunities that I thought were missed by Ken Ham. For instance, he was challenged to find one, just one fossil that was in the wrong strata. Well, there are thousands, tens of thousands of fossils that are in the wrong strata. And there are fossils like trees that span many, many layers. And Ken, for some reason or other, maybe it just didn't occur to him. Maybe he didn't have the time. Maybe he didn't want to go there. But he didn't. I thought it was a point, really, to answer the fool in his folly on the grounds at which the fool was insisting to be answered.
It seems to me it might have been a softball there, but he just might have missed it. He did go for the presuppositional argument, which can be formidable if you've got the guts to press the antithesis. And Ken Ham almost did. I mean, he almost pressed that antithesis right to the core of it. I think he probably could have dug a little bit deeper, but he did sort of drop the Bonson line. How in the world can you account for the laws of logic, laws of ethics, the order of nature, et cetera, et cetera, if you do not assume that there is an absolute? And of course, we press that antithesis a lot on this radio show. But sometimes I think you gotta keep working that into the debate and use perhaps some of the language in the debate to press the antithesis. And that could have been a little more helpful. But the fact of the matter is, he is a presuppositionalist. He gets back to ultimate authority again and again, and he falls on the right side. Now the debate was really centered around the whole issue of science, the definition of science. And Ken Ham opened up the debate that way. He said, I distinguish between experimental observational science and historical science. And he said, there's two different kinds of science here. Now, we're going to talk about that a little bit more on this program, friends. There's a lot to talk about here. And I would say you ought to have your children watch the Ham on Nye debate that occurred tonight. And you can get it various places on the internet. This is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations. We'll be back in just a moment. A play-by-play review of the big debate, perhaps the biggest creation-evolution debate in the history of this country. That next on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson.
Every year, Generations with Vision sponsors a family economics conference somewhere in America. This year, we are sponsoring a conference in Denver, Colorado on March 27 to 29, 2014. This is for families who want to reintegrate the family into a family economic vision, for families who want to find ways to mentor their sons and daughters into the family economy. This is just the conference for you. How do you choose the optimum business streams for your family? How do you integrate your children into the family economy? What about budgets and debt and capital investments? And what about inheritance and taking care of grandpa and grandma along the way? We'll have young entrepreneur panels, mom and daughter panels, retail and e-commerce panels, audience surveys, and some great keynote speakers, including family economics guru Alan Carlson and entrepreneur Dave Tucker, and yours truly, Kevin Swanson. Join us for our Family Economics Conference in our backyard, Denver, Colorado, March 27 to 29, 2014. Register today at familyeconomics.com. That's familyeconomics.com. Register now. Early registration ends on December 31st.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back on the Generations broadcast. It was a ham on nigh debate at the Creation Museum tonight, and boy, did we enjoy that three-hour debate. My family was watching it during dinner, and I'm sure many of you were watching it as well. A very important historical event as two worldviews came into collision. And ultimately, I've got to believe that it was Ken Ham who won the debate. Why? Because he's got the ultimate authority. He understands that you cannot develop any kind of ultimate answers concerning ultimate origins, ultimate sources, without the ultimate truth that can only come from the ultimate and absolute source of truth, and that is God himself. And friends, that's the bottom line in these debates. And Dave, I think you have to take it to the wider presuppositional argument. You could start with data, evidence, and probabilities, and you can look at what evidence you have and whether or not it looks like it's explaining the reality of what's around you, and if your explanations are have been contradicted by other evidence, you have to constantly readjust your theory. And of course, evolution has had to do that over and over and over again, most recently with the Neanderthal man, who, as it turns out, is a Homo sapiens, happens to be a human being, something that creationists have been saying all along, so they had to adjust that one. And so they're constantly having to readjust by the new data that they're picking up on. But in the end, if you want certainty in terms of origins, you're going to have to go to somebody who was there, and that's the point that Ken Ham makes again and again. But you can't spend time undermining the fool and his folly, pointing out all of the multiple contradictions in their systems that have arisen, and they tend to arise every year or two. And so as creationists, we get more and more ammo all the time as we show problems with the dating approach and problems with the fossil record and problems with the fact that they cannot find the transitional forms, and there should be billions of transitional forms if this non-being has turned into being, if an inanimate object has turned into an animate object by pure and absolute chance over billions and billions of years, you would think that there would be some fossils indicating those transitional forms somewhere in the fossil record, and you would expect to see billions of them, but you don't. And so that seems to be a strong indication that that there isn't the evidence there for the evolutionary explanation. Rather, there are these forms in the rock layers pretty much align with the forms that are still extant today. Dave, what do you think of the debate? What is your thought?
Well, Kevin, even as you're going there, what you're talking about is what are the rules of evidence? In other words, how do we know? How do we know what we know? Really, in philosophy, we call that epistemology. If I jump to the very end of the debate, Bill Nye said, you know, the one thing that really drives him is information and process. How do you know that the information is true or reliable? And how do you know that the processes will give you that information? Now, that's an important question, because Ken Ham's answer to the same question, how do you know, was the Bible told me so. Now, so here we have two different authorities. One is information derived from the Bible, and the other is information derived based on processes, we'll call it the scientific method or the pseudoscientific method, depending on how you view on it. The method itself itself ought to be subject to its own self. In other words, how do you prove that science can prove anything? That's a pretty good question. And we're both circular. You know, we believe the Bible is God's word because the Bible claims it is. And then we test it and we have our suppositions challenged as we keep understanding it more. The same thing with the creationist. Now, what's important here is we look at those evidences and we look at our theories. Both the creationist and the evolutionist are constantly making adjustments. Ken Ham alluded to this. Hey, we are constantly thinking about how could this ark have been built? We're adjusting the theory, in other words. But what we're not adjusting is the authority. And I think that's exactly what you're saying, Kevin, is what authority? How do you know is the really the nub of this debate?
Mm-hmm. The question of the debate that was brought up several times was whether or not somebody who believes in creation can be a good scientist. And Ken Ham, I think, put that one to bed. I mean, hey, there have been a lot of good scientists up until Darwin in 1830. So you had a lot of good science, a lot of good science. And then about half of the scientists after 1830, 1840 were creationists of some flavor, the other half evolutionists, until the modern age, the last 20, 30, 40 years, maybe the last 30 years or so, and the apostate age has turned more and more towards evolutionary naturalism, and you have less Christians who happen to be scientists. But up until, let's say, about 1960 or 1970, the vast, vast, vast majority of scientists who ever did anything useful in life were Christians, or at least those who believed in creation in the Western world. They were not these Darwinistic, naturalistic, materialistic scientists. So I think you know, Ken Ham put that one to bed nicely. And moreover, it seems to me that it does take a Christian worldview to do science. How else can you certify the uniformity of nature and guarantee that tomorrow will be like today? And if you do an experiment today and it turns out you did 150 times and it kind of all worked out, how can you be sure that the same probability of that thing happening will happen tomorrow as it happened today, unless you believe in the uniformity of nature? And that, of course, was a challenge that David Hume brought up against the empiricists of his day in the 18th century. So Christians are those who say, hey, we know for certain that nature is uniform because God told us it's uniform and we can count on it because of that. And now we do science because we live in an orderly world maintained by a sovereign God who promised he would maintain the uniformity of nature for us. So that's our worldview. Now, you ask the random chaotic world naturalistic scientists like Bill Nye, okay, where is your basis for science? And he'll go, dead air. He won't have one. Or he'll have to say, I just have to believe in uniformity of science just like you, or uniformity of nature just like you, and we're done with it. So Ken Ham... Go ahead.
Kevin, that's a pretty good summary of the philosophy of Francis Bacon, who's widely thought to be the father of the scientific method. He believed that because God is unchangeable, that his creation would be predictable, and we could look at things that we did in our past or are doing now, things that are repeatable, and we could make future predictions based on the repeatability of the past. And that is how science came to be. And he's a Christian philosopher. And, you know, he said that it's true. A little philosophy inclines a man's mind to atheism. But the deeper you go in philosophy, the more your minds reflect about religion and the mind of God. That's a pretty important observation by Sir Francis Bacon.
In fact, one of the points that Ken Ham made is name one technological invention that could not be developed by somebody who doesn't believe in molecules to man evolution. He never provided one of those. That being Bill Nye's big point. Well, that aside, there was still this argument between whether or not there was a distinction between observational science and historical science. And Bill Nye would say that I know the Earth is flat. I know the Earth is not 10,000 years old because I can see it, because I look at it and I see that. Well, Ken Ham, I think at a critical juncture, pointed out that he too can see that the Earth is not flat because, you know, he had a spinning globe there, the pictures that were available apparently from some kind of a spacecraft. And then he said, I can't say the same thing about the Earth being 4 billion years old. You know, I can't just sit there and watch the world over 4 billion years evolve or be there and evolve over those 4 billion years. If I could observe that, if I could sit there for 4 billion years and observe it, then it would be observation science. I think that was a strong point. I mean, there you can observe the Earth turning over 24 hours from a spacecraft. You can do that, and you can see that the Earth is round. There are other ways to determine it as well. But you can't sit there and watch a world over 4 billion years because you don't live that long. Now, he didn't go that far, but I think if he had gone that far, it would have been a little more obvious what he was saying.
Well, Bill Nye made reference to CSI. Apparently, it's a detective program, a crime program. And what he's really doing is confusing detective work with science. Detective looks at a crime scene, looks at something that has happened in the past without observing it. And based on evidences there about him, be it blood residue or gunpowder residue or something, makes an assertion. But there's a difference between observing something and determining something based on observations of evidence. One is very reliable and the other is not. And in fact, in a court of law, you cannot simply come up with material evidence and get a conviction. It's going to take more than that, and rightly so. And that actually, that comes from the Bible, too, about having two or three witnesses. Yeah.
As Bill Nye was giving his evidence in his opening 30 minutes, he was trying to establish that Ken Ham's perspective was not very probable. His words, not mine. Quote, not very probable. At one point, he says, the evidence, if I may, is overwhelming. See, he paused for a second, even at that point. The evidence, if I may, is overwhelming. Ken Ham's perspective, not very probable. Okay, well, again, what does that mean? What does not very probable mean? Does that mean the same thing as dropping something 99 times and discerning with 98% probability that gravity exists to a GM1, M2 over R squared ratio? Or, you know, what does it mean? If it's not very probable, would you say 2%? Is it 6%, 16%? Is it 47%? Is it 68%? He doesn't have a number for it. But he doesn't have a number for it because his form of historical science is not that objective. And that's the point that needs to be driven home again and again. This man never really established what true evidence consists of. Now, later on, he tries to compare historical observations or historical science to observation science when he says you can't observe the past. He says, of course you can observe the past. That's what we do in astronomy. All we can do is look at the past, and he refers to light travel. He says when you're looking at somebody in the back of the room, it takes, you know, 0.00001 second for that event to move from the back of the room to the front of the room. He says we're always observing the past because it takes time for light to travel. Separating natural laws of the past from natural laws of the future is something we cannot do. Now, that I think was the core debate issue. And he called it that. He says, I think this is the fundamental issue when he said that. But here's the deal. Bill Nye doesn't see that even with observational science, that is astronomy, there can be subjectivity to that too. In other words, science is on a continuum of objectivity or subjectivity. And that's why repetition within closed systems is so important as I see it. And that's why I say you drop something 99 times in a closed area and, you repeat it over and over again in a closed system. And you have these disciplines experiments where you block out confounding factors, you know, like other magnetic forces in the area, or you don't want anybody throwing the ball down. You want to be sure it's just being dropped. You know, there's a lot of things you got to control in that cause and effect experiment that you're doing in real time is as in a small closed space as possible. And you're trying to repeat it over and over again in that closed environment. And even then your conclusions are somewhat subjective, right? I mean, you still conclude with an alpha risk of 96% that with an 89% probability, the cause effect relationship exists. But some forms of science are more subjective than others. And Dave, as I see it, as you work your way back and try to interpret what happened to something, say, 5 minutes ago. Let's say my wife put a cup of coffee here on the table 5 minutes ago, and I've got to sort of figure out how it got there. It would be easier for me to know how it got there if it happened 5 minutes ago than if it happened 5 years ago, or if it happened 50 years ago, 500 years ago, or 50 million years ago would be even more difficult. So the form of observation science I would use to that thing sitting there would be a far more subjective form of science than just sitting there in real time over 5 minutes, dropping something 99 times and concluding with 98% probability that gravity exists. In other words, you tend to lose certainty and objectivity and as you go back in time. And the problem with Bill Nye and the evolutionists is they will not give you a number for the probability. They'll say it's highly probable or it's not highly probable, as he does in the debate, but he never gets to a number. We never get an honest assessment of the probability or the certainty out of him. Dave, I think it's an honesty issue.
Well, there is an honesty issue. I think there's also confusion here. When we talk about probabilities, we're always talking about the future. We have trials that determine a statistical analysis in real time, and then we project that, and the prediction is actually called the probability. So we're making a probability is a prediction about something that has not yet happened. When we're talking about history, we're talking about things that actually have happened. Now, I understand that Bill Nye doesn't find it very probable, but Bill Nye is not the arbiter of truth either. So in order to get to a number about something that happened in the past, one would have to have some concept of what may or may not have happened. I thought Ken Ham was pretty good as he talked a little bit about some of the problems with radiometric dating and other dating methods. You have to know the beginning conditions. You have to know if there was processes that might have changed it. You had to know what the rates is. He was talking about the presuppositions. Those things have to be given a number two. They have to be quantified. How assured are we that a lead uranium process began as 100% uranium before it began its decay? What statistical probability to even violate the thing? But what assurance do we have that it was 100% uranium?
Yeah.
There's a number that science ought to be able to generate.
Yeah. Yeah. Later on in the debate, Bill Nye talks about and asks questions relating to how all these species survived on the Ark, or how you could get them all on the Ark, or how unskilled people could have built the Ark, on and on and on. Of course, assuming that, first of all, he assumes that the people in previous centuries, people in previous millennia, did not have the brain power or the technology to accomplish the sorts of things that they can accomplish today. And the assumption is people who lived before the flood, way back, closer to the creation of the world, were more ignorant. And of course, that's an assumption he draws from his worldview. Moreover, Dave, as you and I both know, God does things that we can't do. And he effectively denies supernaturalism or the possibility of supernaturalism. It's interesting, towards the end of the debate, somebody asked him about religion. Is there room for religion and science together? And Nye turns very magnanimous at that moment. I don't know if you remember the moment. He's very, very nice guy, you know, about anybody who wants to have their own religion. He's very magnanimous about somebody believing in God and having their own little religion as long as they keep away from science. And see, Ken Ham should have pointed out, I think at this point, that Bill Nye won't allow for a God who would enter his universe and do things like, you know, create his universe or do supernatural things within his universe, because Bill Nye is committed to naturalism. He will not allow for God in his system. He won't allow for God he'll allow for God as long as God won't do anything in this world in a supernatural way. As long as God doesn't act like God in relationship to this world, Bill Nye is very, very happy with somebody having a God. That's just fine with him. And I think it would have been a little bit important at that point for Ken Ham to point out that Bill Nye was incorrigibly rooted in his naturalistic worldview and won't allow for anybody to violate his worldview and allow for any kind of a supernaturalism in providence or creation.
And Kevin, that really transitioned the debate where I thought it was a pretty gentlemanly debate. And I thought Bill Nye broke the spirit of the debate a little bit after that. The next question was about whether or not the Bible should be read literally. And you recall that Ken Ham said it needs to be read naturally. He danced around a little bit about the continuation of Old Testament laws, but he tried to speak to how we read the Bible. After that question, for the rest of the debate, Bill Nye kept saying this phrase over and over. Ken Ham's personal interpretation of the Bible as translated in English, as if it was Ken Ham versus science rather than God versus science.
Yeah. Yep. That was pretty much the way he ended the debate. Of course, at the very end, a question was, what is your ultimate epistemological authority? Where do you go for truth? And Ken Ham says, I base my belief on the Bible. And Bill Nye said, Carl Sagan. I don't know if he said Carl Sagan, but that's the first thing he said is, Carl Sagan, my teacher, you know, this is what he told me. So he went to Carl Sagan. Ken Ham went to the Bible. Bill Nye went to Carl Sagan. And then he says, based my beliefs in the information process we call science. So ultimately, whatever scientists come and say, you know, with a 27% probability, I think that there might have been something that happened 4.5 billion years ago. Maybe might. I don't really have a probability on that one, but just trust me on this. So that's where Bill Nye rests his faith. And he says, you know, there's ultimately no real purpose for life but to discover. So you just discover and then you die. And that's pretty much it. And I think it would have been important for Ken Ham to really press that point home. And he did at one point. He says, what good is it to discover and then to die? So he asked the point there. But I think it would have been good to say, hey, now, wait a minute. You know, how in the world can you even conclude that you are conscious at all, that you are conscious of yourself? How do you know that reality is true, that reality is real? At that point, you should, you know, push for the ultimate questions, the ultimate worldview questions. How do you know that this is true? How do you know that you are real? How do you know that you're not just building your system of knowledge on iffy presuppositions that have no rooting in any truth whatsoever? You know, he could have pushed that pretty hard.
Well, I think one of the finest moments, and it happened 2 or 3 times during the debate, is when Ken Ham answered during the Q&A, well, you know, there's a book that explains this. And he went on to explain the Bible a couple of times. And I thought that was kind of fun, because that is our answer, is the Word of God. One other moment that I think is important in this debate is Bill Nye saw this picture on the screen of a fossilized fish eating another fish. And he says, are fish sinners? In other words, why are fish killing other fish if fish didn't sin? And it's just, he cannot put himself in the shoes or to view the world through the lens of the Bible and see that all of creation fell. He's trying to take out pieces of the biblical worldview and insert them into a secular worldview, and they just won't fit. It's really an all or nothing proposition. I think Bill Nye really struggled with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, we're out of time, but just a little Monday morning quarterbacking on the Ham on Rye debate that happened tonight at the Creation Museum. And friends, I would encourage you to check it out. My guess is it's probably at AIG.org, answersingenesis.org. Check it out online. Dave, thanks for joining me and helping me with the play-by-play assessment of what happened tonight at what may have been the biggest Christian, non-Christian creation evolution debate in the history of the Western world.
Kevin, you know, anytime the gospel is proclaimed to a million viewers, I think it's been a great night. The kingdom of God is advancing. Even if we don't see it, we know that the gospel will continue to surround the globe and will win the day. The one prediction that Bill Nye will not accept, the Bible predicts, that the worldview predicts, Jesus is coming back. And that you could bank on.
Yep. And praise God that Ken Ham got the opportunity. And he was, I think, well contained. He had a great spirit throughout the whole debate. He was more gracious than a lot of other debaters I have seen before. And I appreciate Ken Ham's performance at the Creation Evolution debate tonight. Well, folks, you can interact with our radio show by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.